for the recess so I could go have a cigarette. And, Lord.
First user of this program, right?
Yeah. Representative Taylor, I don't know if I necessarily need to declare a conflict of interest on this. I will declare a real interest in it. How about that? Lord. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3204. Representative Lewis.
Mr. Chair, committee members, it's a real pleasure to be here today. And for the record, I'm Leslie Lewis, and I'm the state representative for District 29. And House Bill 3204 comes to you actually from the ideas a couple of friends of mine, who one is still a smoker, the other one, and you'll hear from him in a while, is no longer a smoker. Actually, this started last summer with an employee of mine who is a smoker, and I am also sorry to have to report to you today. She just learned she has breast cancer, and I believe there probably is a connection between smoking and possibly her breast cancer. And so I think it's real important that we do what we can to get smokers truly off of smoking. We need real programs that work and real programs that help people quit smoking. Her insurance plan does not cover smoking cessation, and many insurance plans in the state of Oregon do not cover smoking cessation. But she might at some point want to get involved in one of those programs, and I believe that the state does have a legitimate role in truly trying to get people into these cessation programs and get them into programs that work and that will help them get off of smoking. That should ultimately be our goal, and I've often wondered about the people who raise the taxes on cigarettes, if that truly is their goal, to really get people off of smoking. And I think this is an opportunity with House Bill 3204 for us to prove in the state of Oregon that really is our goal, is to get people off of smoking. And I would encourage you to take a good look at this bill. And we would, I know, eventually like to see it down in Ways and Means so that we can make sure that we properly fund the bill. But this is something I believe very strongly in, is allowing an opportunity for Oregonians who don't have the insurance coverage and perhaps don't have the other income sources to pay for some of these programs to stop smoking, but they would truly like to get involved in a smoking cessation program. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would entertain questions or have you bring up...
Representative Lewis, since this bill was drafted, you have looked at other funding sources. Would you be opposed to us conceptually amending to strike sub 3 in section 1 so that Ways and Means have full discussion without a bias in the bill as to where the funding should come from?
Mr. Chair, I would definitely think that would be a good idea. We don't want to be biased about where the money would come from. And there are also Mr. Bonzak, who is the gentleman I mentioned, who's the other person that the bill is at the request of. Mr. Bonzak has gone through one of these smoking cessation programs, and he has been working with a number of groups who are interested in the bill and some other amendments that he can speak to that they're planning to draft for the bill. But that's definitely one I would think is a good idea.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lewis, what part would you see this playing in Oregon's overall strategy program of smoking reduction? I mean, do you see this as becoming an integral part of it, or do you see it as being instead of, or how do you view that?
I see this as being, and Mr. Chair, Representative Cromwell, I see this as being a very important part of what we should be doing in the state of Oregon. We truly should do things that actually do get people off of smoking. And we should integrate this smoking cessation plan into our other programs that we are currently using. But we should make, I believe, a strong commitment to truly get people off of smoking and not just give lip service to that.
Senator Pearson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondered if you'd considered whether this should have, in your view, this reimbursement should have anything to do with people's ability to pay for their own, in any kind of income level consideration.
Mr. Chair, Representative Piercy, we hadn't actually talked about that, but that's something that, as I said, there are people working on amendments to the bill, and it's something that we could give consideration to.
Representative Close.
Thank you, Chair Cruz. Representative Lewis, it says here on the summary that people could be paid $600 per year and a maximum of 3 cessation programs. Does that mean that they can keep relapsing at times when they're still paid? Is that?
I think that, and I think I'm going to let Mr. Bonzak speak to that. Okay. Yes, why don't you address that? Larry helped write the bill, so I'm going to have him address that.
For the record, my name is Larry Bonsack. Yes, it does suggest, and there's, once again, there's some modifications. It does allow that a person has at least 3 times to try to quit smoking. It recognizes that smoking is a very strong addiction and that many times people are not going to quit the first time. I'm probably a classic example. I quit for 4 years, happened to sit next to somebody that was smoking again and started all over again and smoked again for another 10 years, and recently have quit again. So, yes, it does allow that a person can go up through up to 3 programs to quit smoking.
Just a comment, you know, it seems to me that there's an incentive on the first 2 times not to, because you're going to be paid anyway, isn't there?
I'm not sure I'm following.
Well, I'm just trying to think how people would
use
this.
Yes.
And being a mother of 4 children, you know, if I'm going to keep paying for something over and over, whether they do it or not, they're going to string it out as long as they can.
Ma'am, I got to tell you, the toughest thing that I've gone through is quitting smoking. I don't want to go through it any more times than I have to. I could say yes, that could be an incentive. It'd kind of be like paying people to beat themselves on the head. I don't think people are going to put themselves through that for a couple $100.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lewis.
Yeah, if I might also respond to that, I think that, and we do have to weigh that, you know, what are the costs and the benefits, but I think that we do have to recognize that this is a very strong addiction for some people, and that I believe that the cost to society of having those people smoke is probably much higher than the $600 that we would be willing. And again, this bill is going to go through some modifications, so I don't know what it will ultimately end up. But I think it is reasonable to at least allow a person more than one bite at the apple, because it is an addiction that is very difficult for some people to give up.
Representative Winters.
I agree that it's a tough addiction. I used to smoke it one time in my life. And but I have some questions as to tobacco-free for 6 months, and I really do not think that is adequate if you're talking about time for a person to say that they quit, because it's too easy, having been there, after several months to start right back up. And I also, because I'm very concerned as to that we don't replace education, which I think we really get a big bang for our bucks in getting people not to smoke and getting those messages out. You know, I, for one, would love to have my husband not smoking now, and he still does, and my house smells of it, and I'd like to have it cleared. But having said that, I also am not sure whether I want to put the dollar carrot there for him either. So it's and does the money go to the doctor, or how are we... tell me
how
the program runs.
Some of the amendments that they're working on. But, Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, if I can respond to that. I just heard, and probably most of you heard it, there was a news report that just came out within the last couple of days that most people who are smoking do not believe the education programs that what we've tried to educate them about the dangers of smoking, that their belief that the smoking actually contributes to lung cancer and other cancers and contributes to heart disease, they don't believe it. I think we certainly need to continue the education programs for our young people because we would like to use it as prevention to get them to stop smoking. But I think when we're talking about someone as hardcore as Mr. Bonzak here, and frankly the lady who works for me, Jane Kuntz, she's in her 50s, these people tend not to believe the advertisements anyway. So I'm not sure, frankly, whether you know, and you've mentioned your husband, I'm not sure whether the education programs are really working for those people. But if you can at some point get them to think about a cessation program and you give them a carrot to get involved in a cessation program, I think that you have an opportunity to truly turn a smoker into a non-smoker.
I guess Representative Lewis, speaking for myself, I believe that cigarettes do lead to lung cancer. I believe that it leads to heart disease. I believe all those things. I mean, there's too much evidence out there for me not to believe it. I just don't care. I mean, basically, and to say I don't care is probably not true. It's just that you are right. I have dealt with other addictions in my life, and to some of the major things that people in the society get addicted to, and I beat them all. And they're a walk in the park compared to this. I mean, that is reality for a lot of reasons. And and I don't want to take anything away from the prevention efforts in the tobacco programs we have, but we've been focused solely on kids and solely on keeping them away from cigarettes, and we've kind of ignored those of us that are on them that should get off, and I think we need to put some effort into that too.
$600 good? No. We might be able to buy the chair off cheaper than that. I don't know.
You know, from my personal perspective, the money's somewhat secondary. I mean, we have some people that really can't afford to shell out that kind of money on the front end necessarily. You know, my reality is that if I did a program that cost $250, how many weeks of smoking would it take to pay for them? Not that many, you know. But for a lot of folks, it's being able to have cash in hand to be able to do something like that is really, really the difficulty.
My concern is the bill doesn't consider income, but also doesn't consider whether that cessation program will be covered by insurance or not. Does our Oregon health plan list it as one of the approved medical procedures that they have prioritized?
Representative Cruz, Representative Taylor. There are a couple of issues on this that we haven't addressed. One being the copay on insurance, and that was brought forth by the Oregon Health Division, and we need to address that in one of the amendments. The other amendments, and Representative Cruz, you brought it out, the initial bill calls for a reimbursement at the end of 6 months. Most of the people who haven't quit because of the cost of a program can't put the money up front. So we are addressing a program that would reimburse that over the period of 6 months, and the money goes to the health care providers. It does not go directly to the person. If I could address a couple issues on the bill and give you the intent that we were looking for.
Mr. Chair, do you know the answer to my question? Is it an approved medical procedure that's on the list, on the priority list of the Oregon Health Plan?
I cannot answer that question.
Okay, thank you.
And I can't either, Representative Taylor. I'll find out for you.
I believe there's some people here from the Oregon Health Plan from the Oregon Health Division who will want to testify.
Do you have the answer?
Okay.
For
the record, I'm Dr. David Fleming. I'm the state epidemiologist with the Oregon Health Division. Chair, Representative Taylor, my understanding is that smoking cessation is, in fact, currently a service that's covered under the Oregon Health Plan for people enrolled in that plan.
Okay. Let's see. And some of the story is out. Leslie asked me to, Representative Lewis asked me to do some research on this bill and track it down. In doing so, my name got stuck with it. At the time, I was about a three-pack-a-day smoker. I was looking for some reference material. I called a individual who had helped me quit smoking many years prior, where I was also a three-pack-a-day smoker, and he listened to my voice and said, "You're smoking again, aren't you?" I said, "Get your tail in here." He put me through his program again, and I quit smoking about 7 weeks ago. Haven't had a cigarette since. I've gained a ton of weight, but I haven't had a cigarette since. Nobody is going to come in here and testify to you that smoking is a great thing for everybody. Everybody is going to recognize smoking has some serious health addictions. Representative Cruz, I agree with you. I knew it was going to give me lung cancer, and I could care less either. It's just that's the way it is. The reality is the state of Oregon is making more money by Oregonians smoking cigarettes than the tobacco companies are. The taxes generated are coming in at a greater rate to Oregon than the cigarette companies are making money. If we don't have a legal obligation to help people quit smoking, we certainly have a moral obligation. It's like I don't think the cigarette companies are going to have any money left by the time it comes time for me to sue them for dying. I'm going to have to sue the state, I guess. There's a real reason that we need to help people quit smoking. It is a serious, tough addiction. Representative, I wouldn't, for any amount of money, I wouldn't go through it three times. A divorce isn't worth it. It's just that bad. We've got a number of programs that are addressing the issue of let's get people to quit smoking. Most of them are talking down at smokers. Which I think most smokers resent. I know I certainly did. We've increased the price of cigarettes. I think it went up from like a buck and a half a carton or a package to about $2.50 or $3 a carton. They're $4 a carton in a cigarette machine or a pack in a cigarette machine. With that kind of an increase, we still aren't getting people to quit smoking. There aren't many merchants who would love to be able to get that kind of increase in their markup with no increase in their cost of goods and only have a 10% or 12% drop in sales. It's amazing. It'd be like Ford taking the Taurus from a $14,000 car to a $28,000 car and running a $1 billion advertising campaign telling you what a rotten car it is and only losing a 10% sales. It just doesn't work. This program is designed to turn the free enterprise system loose. We've done a lot of research on the ill effects of smoking. We haven't done much research on how do we get people to quit smoking. This puts enough money in, and the $600 is enough money that a hospital, a medical group, a group of whatever can put together a smoking cessation program and put 20 or 30 people through it and find a program that's going to work, and find a program that covers the medical issues and covers the addictive issues and covers the counseling issues, and make a profit, and at the same time, get people off from cigarettes. Supposedly, three out of four smokers want to quit smoking. This bill is designed to help them quit smoking. There's a number of reasons that this is going to be the most important bill that you will consider all session. You haven't heard that before. It's a non-judgmental bill. It's not criticizing people for smoking. It's offering those people who do smoke a way to quit smoking. The bill eliminates the conceptual bureaucratic, I think this will do some good, and it releases the free enterprise system to put a results-driven smoking cessation program forward. That's the intent of the bill. That's the desire of the bill. I think it's important for the state of Oregon. I think it's important for your constituents, and it's too late for me to benefit.
I'd like to end with a question. you said a lot in this conceptual of this program, but I want to go back to Representative Taylor's question when she asked about whether or not cessation program was provided under the Oregon Health Plan, and I think that the answer was yes, that it is. Then if that's the case, we're taking care of the individuals who can't afford to pay. So my question then becomes, because I know if my husband wanted to quit and he can afford to go to the doctor to pay, so why should we have a program in state government that reimburses him when he can afford to do it on his own?
The goal is to get people to quit smoking. The goal is not, let's see, I'm not interested in a sliding scale. We don't, when people go in to buy a pack of cigarettes, we don't ask them how much they can afford to pay. The tax is the same for everybody. It is, my intention is that if we can create a free enterprise system that will run an ad campaign that says, if you're concerned about gaining weight while you quit smoking, we have a program that will deal with your weight issues. You don't have to gain weight to quit smoking with us. You will turn another group of people loose who will say, we can make sure that your spouse doesn't run away with the milkman because you quit smoking. I want to turn as many different forms open to find creative answers for people to quit smoking as possible. The goal is to get people to quit smoking.
So what I read in this bill here is not really the program that you're talking about, because that's not what this
is. This bill needs some modifications. It needs modifications on the copayment and on the manner in which we release funds.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to suggest that this is a good idea, good for Oregonians, good for the health of Oregonians. And some insurance companies cover it. Our Oregon health plans cover it, and some don't. Wouldn't we just be better to mandate that insurance companies are going to cover smoking cessation?
Mr. Chair, if I may answer that. First of all, it is not true that the Oregon health plan covers all the people that might not be able to afford this program. There are people that are not... certainly don't qualify for the Oregon Health Plan because their incomes are too high. We sometimes refer to them as, you know, the working poor. I don't really like that term, but the fact is there are a lot of low-income people who have jobs, who are gainfully employed, but do not qualify for the Oregon Health Plan. So they are not. That's a population that is not served, and those are also people. Who many times are in their entry-level jobs, or they're in, you know, service work type jobs that do not provide medical insurance. So they would have no opportunity to even have that benefit through their insurance companies. I think gradually more and more insurance companies will start offering smoking cessation programs, because ultimately it is to the benefit of the insurance company as well. Because there will be less medical problems in the future. So I do think you'll have that. But you still have a population of people who are not able to afford these programs and do not have insurance, either through Oregon Health Plan or through, you know, a private insurer.
One other question, if I may, Mr. Chair. I think there's a possibility that this might disincent some programs that are now free, like the one under which I quit smoking, which was a Seventh-day Adventist stop smoking clinics that they regularly sponsor. They've been recommended to me, and it's a buddy system, and it's a regular series of meetings that give you some very good technical tips on things you can do when you're quitting. And so I guess when you talk about the free market system, not everything operates in that way. Some of the better programs that I've seen are these kinds of programs. And so I guess I'm not clear on, does the reimbursement go to the individual who has quit smoking? And if so, could you go to a free program and still collect, or it's for the cost of the program?
Representative Cruz, Representative Taylor, the reimbursement goes to the healthcare professional or to the provider of the service. It does not go to the individual. The second issue, and there's two issues. It doesn't mean, this program doesn't mean that the free programs and the existing programs won't stay in effect and won't be available. It means that those that have financial restrictions, it also doesn't say that you have to spend the whole $600. It says that the financial restrictions that some of those free programs currently have could be lifted. They could afford to have more counseling or whatever kind of errors they might want to put in there. The second issue I'd like to address that covers your case, I tried a couple of those programs of going into the counseling. I'm a hardcore smoker. I'm one of the tough nuts. The people who have the lighter addiction to smoking, we kind of got rid of them by raising the price beyond reasonable limits. Today, the people that are smoking, for the most part, are harder core smokers. It is a deeper addiction for them. For what reason? I don't know. I'm not a doctor. But it's the first 10% was easy. The next 10% is going to be a lot tougher because they've got a tougher time with their habit.
I wanted to just say for the record, it was not easy.
Well, I appreciate that. Believe me.
No, and I say that. I remember telling myself once, when if cigarettes ever got above 35 cents a pack, I was going to quit. I mean, that was a while ago. Any other questions?
God, you're nice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, thank you.
Dr. Fleming.
Four bucks.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. David Fleming. Good afternoon. I'm here to testify today on behalf of the Oregon Health Division regarding House Bill 3204. As you've heard, 3204 proposes to reimburse any resident in the state or the provider of that resident once they successfully complete a smoking cessation program. The division believes it is appropriate to use funds from the tobacco settlement, for example, or interest from those funds to improve our efforts around tobacco education and prevention, including, importantly, cessation efforts. As you've all heard from our presentation before, over the past 2 years, our successful program, funded through Measure 44, has resulted in 500 million fewer cigarettes per year being smoked in the state and 35,000 fewer Oregonian smokers, well above, I might add, what might be expected just from the price increase in cigarettes that occurred during that time period. And as you also heard from us, the key to this program is its comprehensiveness, attacking the program from many directions. There's no one single approach that can be expected to work. So if additional resources were available, we could do more, including improved cessation services. And I've included in my written testimony a letter from the Governor's Tobacco Reduction Advisory Committee outlining some of the things that might be done to further our tobacco prevention efforts in Oregon if additional resources were available. Regarding House Bill 3204 in particular, this proposes to reimburse the providers of Oregon residents who remain tobacco-free for 6 months following completion of a program. And a person could receive, as you've heard, up to $600 per year and be reimbursed for up to three programs. The division does see some problems with this particular approach, and I'd like to briefly outline those for you. First, difficulty in certifying that someone has, in fact, been tobacco-free for 6 months, regardless of whether we ask the Oregon Health Division to do that or the provider of health care service to that person. That's a difficult thing to certify, to know, without expensive laboratory testing. Second issue, just to raise your attention, is the notion that finances is the primary reason that is keeping people away from smoking cessation programs. You know, dollars are always an issue, but evidence shows that few smokers use smoking cessation programs even when they're free, and educating smokers and educating the providers of medical services to those smokers around the effectiveness of smoking cessation is what many experts would say is the key to improving the utilization of cessation services in Oregon. Third, there is the potential for abuse in the system. As you've heard, cessation program costs are variable around the state, and most costs are less than $600. We do have a fear that we would be creating incentives for programs to raise their price to this capped amount. And also, because this would be a single program operating in isolation, there are potentials in our mind for defrauding the system by the unscrupulous. And then finally, cost shifting. As you've heard, many smokers, in fact, do have health insurance that already covers smoking cessation. And one of the primary goals of our program over the past 2 years has been to work with insurance programs around the state to increase the proportion of programs that actually do offer this as a benefit. And we have been successful, and that proportion is increasing. We do have concerns that if the bill were to pass in its current form, that the smart commercial plans would simply drop smoking cessation as a benefit that they offered, resulting in little net benefit to smokers in our state, large increases in costs, and a shift to increase the government responsibility for health care. So in summary, the division believes that the central concept of House Bill 3204, using tobacco settlement dollars or other dollars for tobacco prevention, is a wise and rational one. And if additional resources were available for cessation, we'd love that. However, the experts that we have advising us say that those cessation dollars might better be invested using some alternate approaches in addition to the one that's proposed here. And these would include expanding the services of the existing Oregon Quit Line, which already is receiving and providing services to smokers around the state who want to quit, increasing the availability of smoking cessation programs to particularly vulnerable populations in the state or to in rural areas of the state where these programs may not be currently available, and for improved education, research into the effectiveness of smoking and evaluation of our existing programs. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have about this bill.
Question. Yeah. When you talk about the fraud in the system, I mean, the carrying on one quit smoking gimmicks out there now, one could argue that some of them are a fraud and are just taking people's money with not a whole lot of effect already. Would you agree with that? I mean, they are playing massive track records that probably very few of them have.
Right. Mr. Chair, I would agree that while there are many effective smoking cessation programs out there, there are certainly programs that do not work as well as they claim and are inappropriately taking people's money. Our concern is that if we were to be reimbursing programs at a rate of $600, when in fact many programs cost far less than that, that there's an incentive for people to, unscrupulous folks, to increase the costs of their program and reap the benefits from that.
And issues like that are ones, I mean, admittedly, this is a very skeleton here, and I think that was issues such as that were ones that still have yet to be worked out. I guess from my perspective, generally speaking, you don't know what is going to work. I mean, what works for one individual certainly doesn't work for another, and to limit the options of people in any way to try to quit smoking, I don't think is in the state's best interest. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, Chairman Cruz, I would definitely agree with you. The division thinks that we can and should be doing more to help those smokers in the state who want to quit to quit. We do think that given the limited dollars that are available for tobacco prevention, that improving our system's ability to approach this issue and capitalizing on the natural incentive that there is in the private sector to provide effective smoking cessation services because it saves insurance company costs down the line is where we really need to be focusing our efforts if there are only limited resources available for tobacco prevention in general and smoking cessation in particular.
And could I also assume that if we sent this bill and we removed the funding section from it and we sent it to Ways and Means for the full discussion of how it fit in with other programs from the funding side, you would be more than happy to participate in those discussions down there.
So, Chair, we would be happy to make those discussions. I do feel it's important for us to, for me to make the point that we have worked carefully with experts in the state and experts at the national level from around the world as far as saying, given the dollars that are currently available for tobacco prevention, how can they most effectively be invested to yield the largest return? And we believe that our current program represents that best mix of program elements. We would be concerned that if this were an additional requirement for the program that was superimposed upon it, in the absence of additional resources, that we would be forced to move resources away from what our experts are telling us where the money should be invested into places that might be less productive.
Okay. Currently, I'm going to try ballpark figures here, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. You're spending about $4 million in radio and TV ads, and about $600,000 in cessation programs. Would that be roughly accurate?
For Mr. Chair, for the biennium, those figures are roughly accurate. Although I would say that much of the energy that we're putting into our cessation program is not direct delivery of services. $600,000 refers to the support and quit line, but rather working with private health care providers and others in Oregon to offer those cessation services using their nickel rather than the state's nickel.
I guess I see a somewhat of an imbalance on media campaigns that, and I don't have any scientific basis for my observation other than just talking to teenagers that when I went across them and asking them how those ads impact them and not getting a very positive response myself. And I know it was focus groups and all that, but the folks out there I talked to say it had no impact, and to be weighing so heavily on that program and not putting a whole lot of effort into dealing with those who already have the disease, it seems to me somewhat imbalanced there.
Mr. Chair, one of the primary reasons we have the media campaign is to help educate smokers in the state about the resources that are available to them. We have received many testimonials from smokers who have seen those ads and sent us thank yous, saying that was what I needed to really make that commitment to quit.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, as we talk, one of the key issues regarding smoking cessation that research has shown is it's really not the dollar amount, because these programs are fairly inexpensive, but rather educating folks that cessation programs do work, and in fact, if you want to quit smoking, it's to your advantage to participate in one, a free one or one that's at moderate cost. In that context, education and getting that word out and creating the right environment for people to quit is a key focus of all of the parts of our program. So our belief is that much, if not most, of our program is actually directed at helping people quit, at cessation efforts.
Representative Knoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It occurs to me that Oregon is quite innovative, but this seems to be a major policy shift in where we're headed with this thing. Has this been tried in other states, and if so, has there been any success with this new idea that this bill would entail?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knope, I can provide with you better information. But when we were initially designing our tobacco program and we asked people about what should the relative investment of resources into providing direct cessation services versus other services be, we were universally told, don't put many of your dollars into providing direct cessation services. Experience in other states has shown that that's not a very cost-effective way of achieving the result that you need. So the conventional wisdom out there, if you will, is that the current structure of our program, which has a modest investment in cessation, given the resources that we have, is the best way to go. And relative increases in the proportion of dollars for cessation, we've been advised, would be not a good strategy. If additional resources were available, then that would be a reasonable thing to do.
Other questions? Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just point out a couple of things, and maybe even ask Dr. Fleming how he, what his view on this is, and that is, number one, when we look at success being described as being for 6 months, life insurance companies generally require a one-year cessation time, and the other thing that they do is that they do a simple year analysis to test for the presence of nicotine. The other thing that I would point out is that if a person is that one of the things that we know about smoking cessation is that it will not occur. And no matter how much pressure is put on by the media, no matter how much pressure is put on by families or friends or anybody else, smoking cessation will not occur until the person themselves makes the decision that they are going to quit, and then they find a vehicle to do that. The last thing I would point out is that if a person smokes one pack of cigarettes a day, they spend $120 a month on cigarettes. If they smoke three packs a day, as was alluded to earlier by Mr. Bonzak, that's $460 a month, or thereabouts, give or take, you know, a few bucks. I would think that if a person is real serious about smoking cessation, the first thing they need to do as part of that is to make the decision to quit. And if they'll take the money that they would have been spending on the cigarettes and put it into their cessation program, then they can probably afford to do it themselves. I don't know if you want to respond, Dr. Fleming, to anything that I said.
Chair, Representative Cromwell made very good points. I would point out that the history of successful smoking cessation is that it does take people several times to quit. And a concern that we have that I did not mention is expectation that the first time that someone goes through a smoking cessation course, that they will be successful and would be reimbursed only if they were successful. I think the reality is, as those of you who are smokers or past smokers know, that it takes several times to quit. And we do have a concern that if smokers get in their head that it's this first time that I have to stay quit, otherwise I'm not going to get reimbursed, that is going to result in a potential big disappointment in that person when, in fact, they relapse and might even discourage them from subsequent attempts. It does take many times. As far as your analysis testing, you are correct. There are laboratory tests that can be done on someone who is a smoker to see if they continue to smoke. Your analysis test detects smokers who have smoked in the last couple of days, and it runs about $20 to $30 per test done.
Questions?
Thank you. Ed Patterson. I see you on a different bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Ed Patterson, I represent the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. Mr. Chair, today I'm wearing my hospital association hat, but also another hat, and I'm having the packet passed out to you that addresses the first issue, and I was pleased to hear that the sponsor of the bill, Representative Lewis, was not inclined to want to leave subsection 3 of the bill in, because my association feels very strongly, as you can see by the letter dated March 17th to the legislative leadership, signed by the members of my executive committee, that we believe that the Health Security Fund or the Master Settlement Agreement, whichever you care to refer to it, should be put into a Health Security Fund as the leadership has recommended, and I testified to that point before the House Rules Committee. We think that's sound fiscal policy, and as you have undoubtedly heard many times, there has been a feeding frenzy caused by the very mention of this Health Security Fund. And everybody wants a piece of it, and they stretch to the maximum to what how it's related to health issues. And I won't go through the laundry list of that, but we feel very strongly that this is one of those things that should not be funded through the Health Security Fund or the Master Settlement Agreement. So we would support strongly the idea of this committee removing Section 3. The other hat I wear is the hat of a member of the Tobacco Advisory Committee. Some of you may recall back in 1996, when Measure 44 passed, the Hospital Association, the Medical Association, and Blue Cross spearheaded that effort in terms of organizing the proponents of Measure 44. I represented our association on the advisory committee putting that together. I helped write the actual measure itself, and I was insistent when we wrote the measure that cessation be very much a part of this program. We agreed collectively that while there are those who wanted more than 10% of the proceeds from the 30-cent per pack tobacco tax in 96, we agreed that 10 cents would be adequate, and in fact did provide $17 million of smokers' taxes to fund the tobacco prevention program that's currently being operated by the Health Division. Mr. Chair, as a result of 44, the governor did appoint an advisory committee, and I attached a list of the members of the advisory committee to my testimony just to verify that I was an official member and have been since its inception. Looking through this, one of the names you'll see on there is Scott Gallant, Oregon Medical Association. I think Scott and I are probably the only two smokers on the group. However, Mr. Chair, what I wanted to share with you, and there have been some excellent comments, is that we do support House Bill 3204, and the reason we do is because I sat through numerous meetings of the advisory committee, and we debated about how the money should be spent. There were RFPs developed, and we debated about who should get the RFPs and what the allocation should be to schools, what the allocation should be to media advertising, et cetera. And I attached with my testimony the budget just so you can see in the hard numbers exactly what the results were. And if you look in the Oregon Health Division annual budget column, you'll see the programs on the left, and in the column is what in the last biennium the Health Division budget was for that $17 million that was generated by the 30 cents per pack cigarette tax. And I think was a lone voice in the fact that I thought the more dollars, more percentage of that total proceeds should be spent in cessation programs. And as a smoker, I can tell you that what you've already heard and from anybody who's ever smoked before, that it is horribly addictive. I would totally agree from my personal experience that you have to make a total commitment, personal commitment, to quit. But there are many different incentives. My doctor has finally convinced me after a physical in December that she's going to help me quit after the legislative session, because I told her I couldn't quit during the session. It would be impossible. But she's made a commitment, and I've made a commitment. Next time I come down here and testify in 2001, I'll be a non-smoker. She's promised me that. We'll see. We hope so. But it is very difficult, and it was ironic when we were determining what the budget allocation would be for the different programs. And we ended up with, as the budget indicates here, $500,000 out of the $17 million for cessation programs, as has been indicated by the Health Division. The primary emphasis of the cessation program was a quit line, so people who are interested in quitting can call a phone number and get advice and help. And that program, as I recall, didn't go into effect until last fall, about October, I believe. So we went for many, many months of the program without it being implemented. I don't know if there's been a test or not as to whether it's been effective, but there was very few dollars spent on the quit line until about the last quarter of last year. So I don't think the $500 million has been spent for that purpose, and my belief is that probably very little of the $500,000 is spent. The thing that I disagreed with, and as you can see on the budget number 6, the Public Awareness and Education Program represents a little over $4.5 million that was spent primarily on television ads, and I'm sure that you have seen those. And I question, as some of them are pretty gory, I questioned at the time in the advisory committee whether that was the most effective way to use that money and whether there should not be a larger allocation put on cessation, especially given the fact that it was the smokers who are actually paying for this, and maybe it should be a higher priority within the advisory committee. And so my testimony today is kind of a minority report because I lost that debate. I'm not here in a sour grapes fashion, only to say that I still believe that more emphasis should be put on cessation. There are numerous programs out there, and Representative Taylor talked about the admins program that's been going on for years, and I've heard it's a very effective program put on by that hospital up there. And there are numerous other programs. I don't know which ones work and which ones don't, or which ones could be considered a ripoff, or which ones are very effective and be recommended. My guess is that smoking addiction is probably different for every individual. Some programs will work, some won't. There are acupuncturists who advertise that they have a very effective program, and I have relatives that also have tried that program and have worked at least for a while. And there are many other programs. What I recommended in the advisory committee is that the health division take it upon itself, with funding from tobacco tax itself, to put their good housekeeping stamp of approval on these programs that they can go out and test and see if they are effective or not. So at least I or anybody who wants to quit smoking can have a list of government-sanctioned programs that say these are the programs we recommended because we've gone out and we've tested their patients. We found out that 70% or 50% or whatever number of those patients were able to quit with this type of assistance. And I think that would be a very effective use of these tobacco tax dollars from Measure 44. To the point of whether we're taking care of poor people or not, my understanding also is that the Oregon Health Plan, through some very innovative ideas, is now working with smoking cessation programs. And in the Portland metropolitan area, have worked closely with a coalition of hospitals and health plans up there to make sure that service is available. I don't know that it's available statewide or not, but I think Oregon Health Plan patients and their needs have been addressed. There is a vast segment of the population who still should quit smoking, and whether they can afford to or not probably is a matter of priorities, but I think in my own family, as an example, I have a daughter. She and her husband have three kids that they're raising. She works part-time because she's a soccer mom, and the three kids are three boys and are involved in every possible athletic program. She simply doesn't have time to work full-time. Her husband makes a reasonable income, but they have house payments, and she's the only one that smokes. The husband doesn't smoke, but my daughter does, and she has for years. And fortunately, none of her kids smoke, and I hope that they don't start smoking. I think some of the things that this program has done in terms of educating kids has been tremendous, and I believe it will have an effect on seeing kids not smoking. But whether they could carve out $100 or $250 for a stop smoking program, even if it became a priority, I think it's probably unlikely given the needs of their domestic requirements right now. And I would think that families like that, the moderate income families that have people who smoke, would like to quit, know all the right reasons why they should quit. This program, if it was available to them, might be the incentive to get them to try to quit with some assistance rather than cold turkey. And I think that's the beauty of this proposal, whether it may have some problems with it or not. What I like about this program is that it provides some economic incentive. It doesn't create any new programs. No requirement for additional resources to create a new bureaucracy to do this. It's already there. It essentially is already funded. And this is a very creative idea. Now, there may be naysayers out there that say this in itself will not work or should not be tried. But the fact is, if this committee recommends, at least to the Ways and Means Committee, and charges the Health Division's Tobacco Use Reduction Program to use these kinds of creative ideas to find out what there is out there, but put an emphasis on cessation programs as opposed to no emphasis, which really it has not had, I think that could change the whole application of these tobacco tax funds that are available. They're not tax dollars in the sense that they don't come from state income tax or property tax. These are monies paid voluntarily by smokers like myself, willing to put this kind of money into tobacco use reduction programs. And I would encourage this committee to at least, after you move Section 3, at least move this bill to the full Ways and Means Committee and maybe develop some language that would provide some direction to the Health Division to use these kinds of creative ideas and maybe some other ideas that are creative, but to address specifically with some portion of the resources cessation programs more than they have done in the past. I do not believe, based on my experience in following this, that there additional resources are necessary. There are existing funds that could be reallocated, and maybe $4 million on a television campaign, even if only $1 million went to cessation programs, that would be very helpful and potentially effective.
Thank you. How would you feel about a sunset on this legislation to try it for a biennium or 2 or 4 years and see how it works. I think it's a great program, and I have a tendency to support it, but I, you know, just putting the money there and leaving it there forever without coming back and reappropriating makes me nervous.
Well, Representative Morissette, I think my response to the question is that there is already money going there. There's no additional money. I don't know what the Ways and Means Committee eventually will allocate for this program, but on the books right now, 10% of the 30 cents a pack tax goes into tobacco prevention, mm-hmm. and that money then goes right to the health division.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe the legislature should micromanage all that.
Can I follow up? I appreciate that point, and I'm involved in the task force in Lane County for smoking prevention, and I have been from the beginning, so I understand how that money is being used. I guess what I'm suggesting, if you're asking me as a legislator to support this program, I guess I would support it if we took a look at it at the end of 2 years to see if the cessation program is worth the $3 million. To me, that would make sense. If you know, otherwise, leave it up to the committee and let them make the decision of where the money goes.
Well, Representative Morissette, I think I don't agree with the sunset, but as you can see in the breakdown of these things, there are also surveillance and evaluation funds of $600,000 per year mm-hmm. to evaluate all of these programs. And I don't know this, but my guess is that the Ways and Means Committee that has heard this budget, that will eventually make this decision, has asked for some evaluation, and I think that is a reasonable role for the legislature to do. And I would say the cessation program, which is also listed, should have the same evaluation, and I would think that it would have. And I think the closer the Ways and Means Committee scrutinizes all of these different areas of expenditures, they might raise questions about whether they're really getting their bang for the buck, and this would be another one of those they should examine that way.
Okay. May I?
Yes. Quickly,
okay. I'm easy, and I'll accept that, and I'll support the bill.
Is that a winner?
Just a quick question. And in this particular bill, the reimbursement is set at a maximum of $600, and it's at 80%. Would it improve if we're talking about just actually reimbursement for prescription or the service? I'm thinking about the issue that was raised about abuse and when you prescribe a dollar figure, it sometimes gets clouded.
Representative Winters, I don't know the answer to that. I tend to believe that there will be a small number of people that will avail themselves of this type of economic assistance. I mean, like myself and my doctor, I don't need this assistance. I'm not going to use this assistance, so I can't tell you what the reaction would be, but if the population is aware that this type of assistance is out there, then we can test it. If there's abuses, we can do away with it. In the scheme of things, in the scheme of the $17 million, it's nothing percentage. So if there is abuses, I say so be it. It might be worthwhile.
Okay. I'm about ready to start losing committee. I got a couple of announcements today. Thank you, Ed. Couple of announcements to make. First off, Boards and Licenses sub is at 3:30 Thursday, 3:30 to 4:30. Write it up. Well, hopefully, we'll be done before the assembly starts. And committee, starting next week, we're going long. Leave your afternoon free, please.
You know I have rules.
Well, yeah, but this is much more important than rules. I'm Larry Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand and appreciate the time constraints here, so I will talk as quickly as I can and still be understood. For the record, my name is Larry Harvey. I'm here today representing the American Cancer Society. First, I'd like to thank the committee for considering the value of cessation programs, and I'm extremely interested in what else we can do to help people stop their addictive abuses that they go through in behavior. I am not an expert on quitting smoking. I'm a former smoker, but I am an expert in the area of some of the work that I've done and understand the abuses in life. And like you, Mr. Chair, I think we share a common bond in some of the things that we used to do and don't do anymore. Nevertheless, just a couple of points that I've noticed as we've been discussing the bill. I think all of you probably remember the reports that you received earlier in the year, and I think that the report substantiates some of the successes of the program. I didn't bring a lot of these to the committee today because I know you have them in your office, and as you had time, you probably glanced through them. Go back to page 24, I would suggest, and take a look at the letter from the woman who has now quit smoking as a result of the Oregon Tobacco Prevention Education Program, who wrote in and said it was the advertising that indicated to her that she had a serious problem, and that's how she came to know about the quit line and consequently got involved in a cessation program. I'm not here to suggest to the committee how to micromanage the program. I didn't design the program. I'm not a program designer on cessation programs. The point is, though, is that there are experts that have designed the programs, and they have been living with this day and night for 18 months. Considering that there's been an 11% reduction in the number of cigarettes purchased in the state of Oregon in only 18 months, I would say that's moderately successful. That's a national achievement. Considering that the advertising that is used to make sure that people know which phone number to call when they want to get to a cessation program has an 83% recall, I would submit that that's moderately successful. As a matter of fact, Toyota doesn't have that kind of success, nor does McDonald's. So I find it very interesting that within the context of how we need to tell the consuming public that they're going to die if they don't stop smoking would be just about as wise as deciding that we shouldn't post public hearings because people should just automatically know to come down to Salem because we talk about public policy down here. So the last thing we want to do is advertise. There is a need to communicate to people why what they're doing is not good for themselves. You can talk to anyone who's been through a recovery program or a cessation program. It's not that they don't believe it. They cannot help themselves. I commend Representative Crummell for his articulation regarding the issue of until you're ready to quit, you don't. There is a reason that the United States government thinks that it's important to send 18-year-olds to fight wars. The reason is because they think they're not vulnerable. Teenagers drive fast, they drink alcohol, and they smoke cigarettes because they don't want to believe they're going to die. Those of us who are 50 and older realize that that's not true. That's why we're not in Kosovo. Someone else is. The bottom line here is that without the communication aspect of any comprehensive program, people don't understand what the need is. I'm not suggesting, again, that we don't fund this bill. I'm only suggesting that a comprehensive program must take into consideration all the needs of the consuming public, those people who know automatically that state government's here to help them, and those people who don't have a clue because they're too busy at the 7-Eleven store buying their cigarettes. This has been suggested that it would open the door to free market, and I think that's great. I'm a free market guy. I'm wondering what's keeping folks from coming into a free market system now. I don't know of any restrictions in this state or in any state right now that says you can't come in and set up programs for cessation in Oregon. It would be great. If, in fact, 75% of smokers want to quit, seems like there's a built-in market. 3 out of every 4 people you meet on the street probably wants to quit smoking. Free market ought to come in here and set that up, and I would encourage them. Your policy decision is whether or not you want to pay them to do it. Up to you. Feel free. I think there'll be some other businesses in here who'd want that same kind of help if that's what you decide, and in fact, I might be back myself. Bottom line, I think this is great, and I think that it is very important that as we do think about this policy, we try to understand the mind of an addict. Again, going back to Representative Crummell's issue, it's hard to stop doing something when you cannot help yourself. Some of us have learned that the hard way. It is hard. You just don't want to believe it. You find excuses every day. Just one more cigarette. I can't quit smoking during the legislative session. It'll drive me crazy. So I'll wait till July 4th. That's if you're an optimist.
labor.
There are excuses, and that's okay.
Anyone will do.
So I would ask the committee that you strongly consider funding a cessation program. I don't know where the existing resources might be. If it's just in the current program, they might be there. I don't know. They might be elsewhere in the Oregon Health Plan. There might be some things that we could do instead. There might be a lot of different resources. My sense is that those decisions will be made by people with much finer tuned minds than mine. But I would appreciate that you do take a closer look at this bill, because even the proponents have said that there are a number of amendments that need to be added into the bill. I would concur with that. I would be thinking that perhaps some of the folks that have been here today to discuss these issues might ought to be involved in those discussions, and maybe the chair would like to recommend that, whatever he thinks would be appropriate. But I would appreciate those thoughts and just throw those out for the members of the committee to consider on this extremely important issue. Thank you.
Ms. Ferndo, thank you for waiting. While you're coming up, I'm going to move to suspend the rules for purposes of allowing Representatives Lehman and Morissette to vote on House Bill 3194. Without objection, the rules are suspended. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Morissette.
Aye.
Representative Lehman.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay, now we just need to get that on the record so they can vote on pieces. Representative Pierce's wonderful bill. Oh, she can say it was unanimous out of committee. Please.
Hello, I'm Dennis Florenda, committee first and chair. Chair first and committee Cruz. This is the first time I've ever tested in one of these, testified in one of these hearings. So I am my name is Dennis Florendo, and I am a psychotherapist. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I've been trained and licensed by the state to do psychotherapy. And I have been working with people who have addictions for the last 30 years. And one of my treatment plans that I use is I use a hypnosis. And one of the things that I wanted to point out, it may be very, very hard to stop smoking, but it's not impossible. My job is simply to make it possible for people to stop. And one of the things that's important is when I first started working with people to help them stop smoking, that's different than warn them about it, is that it was considered scut work. And that was something that people just didn't do. You just didn't work with this kind of thing. This is 30 years ago. And I have worked with people who simply have this kind of addiction. I've also worked with people who are alcoholic and people who are into other drugs, too. And there's no difference between an addiction is an addiction is an addiction. And when you do a study and you go out here and you study people who are addicted to alcohol, people who are addicted to heroin, and people who are addicted to nicotine, they have the same relapse rate, it's 3/4, which tells you that this is a addiction that you're looking at, not just a bad habit. And the other thing that marks an addiction is the compulsive and uncontrollable seeking of the use of and craving of the substance you're addicted to, despite whether or not you have any health problems about it. And the fact is that my focus has been on having people stop. Addictions are addictions. The craving and compulsive use of something that you're addicted to is something that can be worked with, and it's physical. Because the addictive process, which is 3/4 of the people relapse, that shows you that is simply not a matter of the substance that's there. It's just a matter of addictions are addictions, and that's what happens. Is you're going to have that kind of chronic relapse rate. Now, I've been in private practice in Westland for about 30 years, and I've been working with people way over time in terms of putting together a program to stop smoking. And I'm one of the scrupulous people who practice this, and I use hypnosis in order to work with people. And I wanted to take and become very good in hypnosis. So I took a technique in psychotherapy and the need, which was to have people stop smoking, and I put it together. And you have to do at least 1,000 people to get good. And I became very good at this. And I've had, I have a very good practice, and a large portion of my practice is smoking cessation. And I hypnotized Larry to stop smoking twice. There's a relapse rate that's there. And there are programs and there are practitioners who can make this, see that it works. The other thing is that when it comes to warning people about stopping smoking, that's a people approach. And my approach has been very successful because I use an individual approach. I look at each person as they come through my office and try to figure out what they need in order to help them stop smoking. And I'm going to give you, this is going to be surprising, as I run about a 90 to 95% success rate. And it's because I have an individual approach. And I've been able to work this over time to see that I have that kind of effectiveness rate. And people have asked me, why don't you sell tapes? And, it's because tapes don't work. They simply don't work, as well as having an individual session of psychotherapy with hypnosis. Another thing I'm able to do, because I approach people on an individual basis, is I can see them, and I'm a psychotherapist, so I can just kind of see what they need and figure out what personality traits or what cultural traits are keeping them bound into smoking. And we work with those issues as well as the addictive part of their behavior.
Chairman, Representative Lehman,
I would be willing to take a small contribution to this committee if you were willing to hypnotize you and either deal with your smoking or your voting pattern, either one. Extremely helpful.
As I understand with hypnosis, you can't make somebody do something that's fundamentally against their character. So the voting pattern probably wouldn't work. Any questions? Thank you very much, and I'll be seeing you.
Thank you. I would have brought written material had I known. Then next time when I get.
Okay. Committee, what I want to do is I want to kind of see where we're going with amendments and then bring this back so we have a little better idea of where we're going. Ways and Means has been there quite the time frame that the substantive committees are, so we still have a little time. Then I'm going to close the hearing and close committee.
Thank you.